Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar.
Hello everyone and welcome along to the RTE GAA podcast. Sean Kavanagh and Ryan McCluskey will be along a little bit later on to chat football, but Shane McGrath is with myself and Rory to start off with the hurling. And Shane, myself and Rory gutted to miss the night in the park, but you were there for the Cork Renaissance. What was it like?
It was everything that people saw, Jackie, like, and more, to be honest. I don't know. It was one of those ones, I suppose, that people, the official attendance, I think, was around 42,670. Yeah. 41,670, I've written down here. I'd say when people are saying that they were at it, it'll probably be go up to around 300,000 or 400,000 for people that said they were at it. But it was unreal, Jackie. I mean, like, I've been involved in I've been lucky to be involved in some classics and, you know, watched them down through the years. And I don't know, it just, everything that it was, Jackie, right, with the atmosphere, Saturday night, you know, there's a different buzz about Saturday night games as well. I'd be all for more Saturday night games now as well, to be honest. And just what we got, what was on the line, you know, just the way it finished, it was one of the best hurling matches I've ever seen. And like, I know people were saying maybe the art of defending is dying a death here, like, you know, with the amount of scores, but I tell you now, the art of defending is still not bad, but I just think the quality of ball that's going in now has gone through the roof as well. I think before it was mainly 50-50 balls going up there. Now they're getting it to zones in the pitch and the ball going in is probably 80-20, 70-30 in favour of the forward. And it's, as a defender, no matter how good you are, if there's that quality ball coming in, it's very hard to defend against it. I still think there were some brilliant clips of defending, and maybe none more so than actually by Nicky Quaid. Like it, there's some... See, all these things got lost in the absolute mayhem. And
I thought he was nearly man of the match.
Of the whole thing, like, and even small things I just wrote down, like Nicky Quaid made two top drawer saves.
The save from Brian Hayes, Shane. Like, that's point blank. It is probably less.
And if that goes in, it's game gone.
I mean, it was extraordinary now.
I actually think the one he made from Shane Barrett was nearly, like, because Barrett did everything right. He hit it low, he bounced right in front of him. He got a touch to it to the left and takes it out of danger as well. So all them things being said, like, they just, it was unreal. Like, Shane Fanning scored 3-3 and didn't get man of the match. Like, right?
I know.
Like, Darren Fitzgibbon was immense in midfield. Like, it was just so...
In fairness now, if they'd have given man of the match to Shamey Flanagan and Cork...
Would have been killed.
With all the people, there would have been killings in the field, yeah.
Just the other small things too. Like, obviously, everyone's seen what went on and unfolded. I just quickly go, like, say, from a Cork point of view, Shane Kingston, right? And again, just because of all the mayhem that went on, it got lost. Actually, what he did for the goal, lads.
Yeah.
Like, he soloed about 40, 50 yards... Very, very quick puck out now with Patrick Collins. The umpire assisted him there, getting the ball. But again, that got lost in the absolute mayhem of it all. Myself and Marty were flat out. You know, we nearly had heart attacks too. We was just watching it, trying to keep an eye on everything. But the goalie pucks it out quickly. The ball breaks. Shane Kingston gets it. I think he soles around 40, 50 yards. But it's what he does to get inside the 20-yard line. If you watch it back, lads, he actually flicked the ball over Dermot Burns' head. Mm. Like, you were talking about millimetres here now between them getting the penalty and still being in it. Them getting the penalty and we maybe not seeing some of Cork's greatest stalwarts ever playing a championship match for Cork in Páirc Uí Chaoimh again. You are millimetres away from Pat Ryan's job being on the line. So Shane Kingston goes through, flicks it over Dermot Burns' head, who Dermot Burns is about 6'5", 6'6" now. So Dermot Burns could have easily just snapped that, but that's just it. And I said it last week, you need a bit of luck. He got the ball, he was brave enough to take it on, he was brave enough to do it. And I think Shane Kingston, he had a hard old time personally. You know, when your dad isn't over the team, you're always going to be the one that gets it a little bit harder maybe than the rest of them. No more so than my own son is going to the primary school here that I'm principal of, and maybe I'll be harder on him than anyone else. And maybe that's the way it was with Kieran and Shane. And he came on and he won that penalty. Hoggy just stepping up for us to absolutely bury it. I think Hoggy loves those moments. He loved that. You're just, it's just, it was but just everything what, Shane, and more,
the cuteness of the two of them, right, on that. One is Shane Kingston with the three balls he got. He won a penalty, he scored a point, and he had a wide that was, a you know, the right shot. It just didn't go over. It's a massive impact. And the other one on Hoggy, not only does he nail the penalty, but in the, when the free comes after that, that he wins over on the sideline, or sorry, that's won over on the sideline, Hoggy comes over and he says to the linesman, is there time for them to puck it out again?
Yeah,
and the linesman said, yeah, there is. So he's cute enough to go down the line to Connolly to win it again. Like, it was just, there was so many smarts there in Cork that we have not seen.
Like, and I tell you what, Jack, you know, to stay that composed in, again, I go back to the atmosphere, like, it was unbelievable. Like, stay that composed, to have the peace of mind or the whereabouts to go, right, If I don't nail this and it goes wide, Nicky Quaid is going to hit it down the field, and we don't want the Gaelic grounds to happen like happened last year.
Exactly.
Limerick win the breaking ball and it's game over for them. But it was like, it was the peace of mind to go put it down. I'd say he was even kind of half open to nearly be a sideline.
Yeah.
Just to kind of kill the thing down. But sure, Brian Hayes won it, and absolutely, it was just unbelievable. And look, all those things rolled into it. It was a pleasure to be there. It really, really was. I said on the radio, if you were writing away to Santa Claus for a game of hurling, I think this is what would be under the Christmas tree when you wake up on Christmas morning, because it had everything. It had the drama, it had the scores, it had the Paul Pinnock getting booked with Pat Ryan, it had the, you know, it just had everything. And I just have to say, as well, I suppose I came on here last week giving out about James Owens, and I thought a couple of the things he did on both sides between Tip and Watford were very, very questionable. I thought Sean Stack probably gave the best refereeing display I've seen this year, personally seen. There's been some very, very tight games in Leinster as well, and there's been right calls made. And there was a really good call made at the Carrick-Kilkenny game as well, where Tom Phelan threw the ball away and he gives the free, allows Marty Kavanagh to level it. But Sean Stack, and again, I go back to the atmosphere and getting caught up in it, and he could have been swayed towards a couple of decisions, e.g. near the end of the game, Hoggy wins the ball near the sideline. He actually wraps, I think it's Fergal O'Connor, in around him, pulls him down to the ground. And the Cork players are saying, oh, it has to be a free. But Sean Stack just stayed calm, talked to his officials, and it was a right free to give it to Limerick. Because when you look back, and if Hoggy actually caught him and pulled him to the ground, it was that, it was the bookings of the officials. He consulted with his linesmen. And to be honest, I don't think he got too much wrong. And I tell you, that's a credit to him for what was going on down there in Park Free Saturday night. But look, Jackie, It was everything and more. It really, really was. The bar has been set high now for the rest of the year. But look, absolute. I think, as I said it to Marty, lads, like, sometimes we take it for granted. We're there looking out. I got a lovely picture there on my phone, kind of a panoramic photo. And I said, if I sent that to someone now living in anywhere, like, and I said, this is amateur, like, what's going on here now? Like, you know, this is by name amateur. And sometimes you take it for granted, but it was unbelievable now to be down there Saturday night. It really, really was. I didn't even mind not getting home till I'd say it was half 12.
Getting out of the park with some crack there. Yeah.
I gave McDonald's a rattling cash on the way home. And got me home. And,
Junction 8.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's very, very lucky to be there to be able to call it for a few people on the radio. It was brilliant. Like, it really, really was.
Do you know, sometimes, Rory, there's a recency bias where every match, every week, you're like, oh, this is the greatest game of all time. Because when Anthony Daly on the Saturday game said, oh, it was one of the best of all time, I was thinking, oh, God. And then I watched it back and I was like, oh, my God, he was right. Like, because in the heat of the moment, it's hard to see that immediately. But I really feel like this is going to be remembered. Shane is right for all of those reasons as one of the best ever games we've seen.
You could make a 26-minute little half-hour documentary on this match, because, as Shane just said, there's so many things happened within the course of the game. The narrative going in, five in a row chasing All-Ireland champions against a team on their own patch who were about to exit the championship at a very early stage again, and might still go out of the championship despite the heroics on Saturday night because of the way things might pan out. Even if they were to go up to Thurles next Sunday and get a win. So it was extraordinary. And I know some people mentioned, at a Kerry friend of mine, saying, Jenny, did you win the All-Ireland? And I said, like, you know, that's a little bit trite and potentially small bit churlish. Like, I mean, yeah, there was an outpouring of emotion afterwards. But I think that was there was a couple of reasons for that. It was the nature of the way the game was won, because it looked like Cork were dead and buried again, and for them to finally pull one out of the fire in that manner is very unlike them, because they just haven't been getting those types of breaks in big championship matches over the last couple of years, really. And I think also it was a reaffirmation from the supporters that we still believe in ye. You're giving it everything, and this is what it means. And I can tell you without any fear of contradiction, because I'm going down myself, there will be 30,000 Cork people heading to Thurles next Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just on the outpouring of emotion, Rory, it's interesting you said that. But like, to be fair, now I met a few Limerick people coming out, and they understood it. They understood it, like, because you know what? They have the greatest hurling team they've ever had in their history, or maybe ever will have in their history of their county. It's not too long ago now that we went to a trilogy with them in 2007. And after they beat us after the third game, it was something very, very similar in the Gaelic grounds. There was no cups. There was nothing won. What they had done has got them was final. So I think a lot of the Limerick people, to be fair to them now coming out, they said, look, there was a bit of jokes, you know, where's Liam McCarthy? You know, is this the Ireland final? Yeah. But they said, you know what? It's not too long ago that we understand where they were. And I think they, you know, the outpour of emotion, I think it was totally understood. Do you know what? Yeah. If Tip did the same thing, if anyone did the same thing, it would have been the same thing with everyone coming onto the field. So look, that's just the natural thing.
But if you think about it, Shane, though, right? Last year they had 2 1-point defeats, that draw. Like, so they were. It's not like they were a million miles away.
Yeah.
So Rory's right. The change of fortune because they won a tight game is actually what the pressure valve is. It's not necessarily the outcome of there's a cup there. It's actually going, we've done something that we haven't been able to do before, and now we're on a different trajectory. I think that's what it was, as much as anything.
That's what it is for the players, for the management, obviously for the fans as well. You could see it in them as well. It's the Atlantic Ocean, Jackie, between winning and losing. And when it comes down to it, it's very, very small details, like two pucks of a ball, and they're out of the Munster Championship last year. This year is the same thing, you know what I mean? But look, I was down there a few weeks ago for the Cork Clare game, and this was a different, like, just the whole thing was different. The atmosphere, the team, everything. And I just think, Rory and Jackie, like, you're two pro Cork people. I just think sometimes maybe Cork people are looking at them going, why can't you do this more often?
All the time.
Like, I mean, like, yeah. this you can do this, like, like the passion that they showed, the heart that they showed. Like, Ethan Toomey, right, he got taken off, you know, Keane got on top of him in the second half, you know. I think the worst thing he did actually was actually roar into Keane Lynch's face after he won a free. I just think you just don't do that, Keane Lynch, like, you know. So, but he worked so hard, and what the experience he would have got. Like, Robert Downey had a man mountain of a game. I thought Kieran Joyce is going to be a huge loss, and he was, but Robert Downey stepped up to the plate massively. Like, I just think this is just the affirmation for them that we are good enough to do it. But I just think maybe from a Cork fan point of view, and as I said, we're talking to Cork people here, I'm sure there is that little bit going, it has to be this now and more next Sunday in Thurles. It can't just be this game. Like, like, you're so close last year, it's still in your hands, you can do it. And as I said, like, you know, it will be, like, it'll be 3-4-1 Cork fans above in Thurles.
Oh, like, it'll be convoys coming out of Cork. Like,
so then I suppose to back that up, Rory, is the fans are going to come. I love the Cork crowd are great crack. And when they come to Thurles, they're great.
I love
crack.
Thurles.
And Larry Corbett and all the rest of them will love seeing them coming up and the crack they have in the bars before and after. And it just for them, I suppose.
I can't wait. I so can't happy. Wait myself. I'm going down myself, Shane.
And
just...
now they want the performance now to back up.
Damn. But you know, the difficulty is they could get that, Rory, and then still not get through.
Yeah.
That's the hard thing, I think, now, having had that at the weekend, now knowing destiny is still not really in their own hands.
We didn't really expect both championships, to be fair to Leinster as well. Like, we all expected certainly Munster and Leinster and the championship would deliver. Wexford lose to Antrim, then go out and beat Galway. Carlow draw with Kilkenny. Clare have Limerick dead and buried. Limerick rise from the dead. Waterford turn Cork over on the first day out. Then the following week, an unbelievable draw against Tipperary. Tipperary get hammered by Limerick and go down to Walsh Park and turn their season around. It is just story after story after story in the hurling championship. And we're not even into round four, is it? We still have two rounds of the provincial championships left. It's extraordinary. It's been stellar, absolutely stellar. Couldn't give enough credit to the players, the management, everything. And the GAA really do now need to ride and surf this as much as they possibly can.
Yeah. I think, listen, that's well put, because it has been magic. I guess the thing, Shane, is where Munster goes from here, because if you last week had have said, who am I going to pick my top three? I think you would have thought it looked a bit more straightforward. Waterford had put themselves in the mix. Now suddenly you're thinking, I don't really know, because next weekend, these two games are going to decide exactly who's coming out, and we still could have blood and thunder and I find one of these teams who has put in an unbelievable performance heading out of Munster.
Stop, yeah. It is the best team in the GAA at the moment.
By the way, sorry to cut across you there. Limerick could technically still be eliminated here. That is the insane thing about it. Everybody can still go out and everybody can still progress. It is mad. Sorry, Shane.
It's unreal, yeah. Look, that's it. I don't know. I still think Clare are a serious team, lads. I thought, you know, they just, you know, what they did. Well, I know exactly what they did against Limerick. And you know what? It nearly was a carbon copy there the other night against Cork again. Limerick retreated in the second half. Cork kind of followed them as well. Limerick are very, very good with numbers back and working it through the lines and finding space inside. You know, albeit Cork gifted them the three goals, really. But, you know, they came back into it because they dropped bodies back. They did the same against Clare. So what I'm trying to get at with the Clare thing is, I'm sure that was a massive learning for Clare. I thought Clare were only okay against Cork, to be honest, lads, and won that one score 3:26, was it, I think, or the 3:28. Like, I still think Clare are coming. They've had 3 weeks off. They will, you know, they're at home now as well, you know, and the next day against Waterford. I still think they're going to get through. I think they're very, very strong. Limerick need the break, lads. They really do. First time I've seen it now, and look, it's easy talk looking down and again with everything that's going on, but just the way Cork ran at them, Barry Nash going down with a bit of cramp.
Sean Finn looks like a hamstring.
It looks like his hammer might be in trouble. Obviously, you don't have Mike Casey, you don't have Peter Casey.
Declan Hannan looked a bit injured as well coming off.
He got a kind of a bang to the head too, you know, and had to go off for a finish. But look, it's just the way the Cork lads ran at them. Like, they really do need this week off. Like, I think if Limerick were on again this week, I suppose we said this before last time, but they look tired. Like, They did, because of the way Cork ran it up. That's my worry for Tip. If Cork run a Tip the way they did at Limerick, I don't know, will we be able to live with it, to be honest. I hope we will. I hope there's a real, you know, blood and guts performance coming from the Tip boys now as well. But again, look, as you said, Jackie, it's so hard to call this. I do think Clare will turn over Watford. My heart wants Tip to win, but my head feels that Cork will win, in Turles. But again, you just don't know. It's a very hard one to call. Limerick need the break, and their last game then is against Waterford, who either, you know, will still have it in their hands, really, because of the 3 points they have, regardless of what happens against Clare. So it's just, you know, like the Premier League is going to come down to the last day regardless. The Munster Championship is going to come down to the last day regardless, really, you know. So I think that's the magic of it. Leinster seems to be the same as well. Like, so look, lads, I know sometimes we go on about Munster too much. We do, but look, it is what it is. It's just, it's box office every week. But Leinster's getting there now as well, you know?
Leinster Championship this year has been outrageous.
Extraordinary.
I don't care. Like, there's no way anyone would have said that Dublin would be top of the table after three rounds. Yeah. I don't care. And if they did say that, they're liars. Like, because if you're going on form, and even if you're going on, where are Dublin at? Like, they were 6-7 points down coming into the last couple of minutes against Wexford. They got 2 goals to, you know, give them a lifeline, like, get them back into it. Then they go on and they beat Carlow. And, like, even at halftime, the Carlow game, you're like, going, what are Dublin at? Like, losing to Carlow. But now we know what Carlow are about. Like, we look at the progress they're making. They go on and they absolutely demolish Antrim. And I was listening to John Milan on the radio, he made a good comment. You talk about the 1%ers now, lads. And it was kind of a laugh at the time, but these are 1%ers. The air conditioning gone in the Antrim bus. Like, some of them might have been on the bus for 2-2.5 hours. Like, it does have more, like,
that's some intel Milan has now.
His good buddy, his former teammate Clinton Hennessy would have been involved with Antrim, and he's living up there now as well. So I just Leinster, it is like Galway. Oh God, God only knows what's going on there. Kilkenny, like, we're down to 6 or 7. You know what? I still think Kilkenny are the best in Leinster because they haven't had their full team really. Between injuries and everything, I think they're going to get stronger as the weeks go on, and they'll be fine. So look, box office stuff everywhere, lads. You know, it really is, like.
Yeah.
Do you know the mad thing is though, Rory? Shane is right. Kilkenny might be still seen as the strongest team, but actually, with all of these teams slipping up in all these places, I just don't think they can be affording to take any chances now. You know, Kilkenny will have Wexford coming to Nolan Park snapping as well. And you're thinking, I don't know, like, the Leinster Championship is going to go down to the last day as well. And I think all of these teams, particularly Shane mentioned Galway as well, I think they'd want to be finding a bit of rhythm now.
I mean, Dublin on Saturday in Parnell, and then Wexford to finish. Like, they're two tough games for Kilkenny when
especially
they're
the way Dublin are going now.
And when you're missing a lot of, as Shane mentioned there, when you're missing so many frontliners. I mean, Jackie Terrell mentioned to us last week about the fact that Owen Cody mightn't be seen until maybe the knockout stages if Kilkenny get there. It might be something similar for Adrian Mullen, although maybe he'll be back a little bit sooner. I know Scruff was back at the weekend, wasn't he? He started on, so at least, you know, you have a goalkeeper back in situ. But, you know, look, there were some positives as well from a Kilkenny perspective. I think they had Owen Wall score 1-3. I think that's a new name. Maybe that's kind of beginning to rise to the surface. One thing I did notice about Kilkenny is their size. Now, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was just the fact that it was on GA Go or something. I don't know. They look small. They look like a small team. I don't know how significant that is. I know it's exceptionally significant when you go in against Limerick, for argument's sake. But it's very possible that a team gets eliminated from Leinster that we were not expecting, given how competitive that has been. I think the real shame, really, in many ways, is that there's going to be a team relegated out of it, because you would have to say everybody has made a contribution, everybody has made progress, everybody has been competitive at different stages. So it's just unfortunate that one team now is going to drop back down again. And you know,
well, let's say for instance, Jackie, that's Carlo. That's so wrong, given what you just saw at the weekend, Shane. Sorry, go on.
I just think, like, we're on about, like, say, promotion of the game and all this, like, kind of thing, but there's no secret to success, Les. And I think, like, the work that Carlo are doing is coming to fruition now. Like, they go down to Kilkenny and they play a lot of, like, league games or juvenile league games in Kilkenny. There's a Leinster league for the club teams as well. You know, they get involved in that. Like, this has been coming for them, like. You know, and I go back to, like, say, maybe a point systems when it comes to the All-Stars, like, that for these performances, if you could notch up some points, and I'm talking about the likes of the Marty Cavanaghs of this world now, like, I mean, like it's real success, like, is the likes of him getting nominated for an All-Star, whether he gets one or not, and the belief it gives everybody, the way he stood up. But I agree, Jackie, right? And I think maybe this is what it is, like, that whoever comes last in Munster maybe should play whoever comes last in Leinster. I just feel it's getting, you know, with the quality that's there now, the games we're getting and the way things are going, like, if you're good enough, if you finish last in Munster, if you're good enough, you'll beat whoever finished last in Leinster. And if you're not, they're the trend of relegation, like, as well. That's my view on it, like, and I think, like, that's the fairest way to do it, like, as you said, like, you know, we're talking about the Antrims and, you know, Antrims and Carlow's, Dublin to a lesser degree, you know, Wexford have pushed on now, and obviously Galway and Kilkenny are what they are. So they're Galway, Kilkenny, Wexford, not really going, it's not going to play to him, not going to play to Dublin either. But whoever comes last in Munster, you know, they probably should be playing whoever comes last in Leinster for the relegation, rather than just saying, you know, if you're last in Leinster, that's it, you're gone. So that's my view on it, like, because I think it's, Leinster has been, it has been absolutely brilliant as well. It just does, probably, just the natural way it is, it just does get caught in the limelight of what's going on in Munster.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is, like, you know. So.
But every championship does, though. I'll be honest, Shane, every championship, there's nothing compares to it in terms of the razzmatazz, the colour, the crowds, the games, everything. Like, I mean, there's nothing, everything pales into comparison in relation to the Munster Hurling Championship. So Leinster shouldn't feel specifically tarnished in any way. And I don't think they do.
No, yeah. I do think, though, because now the way the table is, and for people who might be looking at it, let's say, as Shane said, Dublin on top, which maybe people might not have expected after three rounds on 5 points, Kilkenny on 4 points, Wexford and Galway both on 3 points, Antrim on two and Carlow on one, which means we are going to be playing into the final round in this. And that game between Antrim and Galway this weekend and Dublin Kilkenny, suddenly you're thinking, I'm not too sure that the top two in Leinster can feel any comfort this weekend, Shane, that they might have thought, era, by round four, we're probably already through, we're grand, we can start kind of having a bit of shape on our team. I think suddenly Dublin will be thinking, right, we'll have a crack off Kilkenny, we're on top of that table. But I think between Antrim and Galway now as well, both of them actually kind of have to win this game to have any chance of getting out now.
Oh, no, 100%. Like, let's say if Dublin win, Leinster final, 7 points.
Exactly. Yeah,
like that's where they're at, and like they're coming into it in a great place, albeit, like, you know, didn't really perform against Wexford but got the draw, better against Carlow, but we actually now realize that performance against Carlow was we have to put a bit more credit on it, because, you know, I don't think we really knew how good Carlow were, lads, until what they did. You know, okay, Kilkenny are missing six or seven probably first teamers, But still, they're getting these results, which normally, like the spread on these matches, normally when it comes to Carlow lads playing Galway to Kenny's, you could be talking 15, 16, 17 points, like. And that's what most people would be expected, like.
And for the scoring difference alone, for a Dublin, let's say, to put 20 points on Antrim, those things do make a massive difference as well.
Oh, massive, yeah. Massive, like, you know, and... Look, Galway go up to Antrim. I just don't know. I don't think Galway even know where they're at, to be honest, Jackie. Like, just they don't seem to be missing anyone, like, really. Like, they have a lot of their key players playing. It's not as if they can say, you know, we still have 4, 5, 6 guys to come back there. You know, they'll find their fit, find their form again. It's getting to the time now where, like, that if this, you know, if they don't get something out of that in Corrigan Park, you know, which you would expect them to, like, you know, and Antrim will be deflated and it'll be hard for Antrim now. It really will be for Darren Gleeson Antrim to get up to that pitch of that emotion that they showed in the victory over Wexford. Yeah. It'll be hard to get to that pitch again after this happening. But look, I just don't know what Galway are going to show up no more. So we didn't know what Wexford were going to show up against Galway. And that's what you have. And with the Dublin thing, like the buzz will have to be as good as it has been for Micheál Donoghue since he took over Dublin a year and a half, 2 years ago. It has to be now with... on top of the table, they're at home. Parnell's a hard place to go. Kilkenny are going to be down a few. You know, I'm sure Derek Ling will be reading them the riot act this week, so not much motivation needed there for them. Maybe they'll get one or two guys back as well from injury. But yeah, look, I mean, like I honestly thought by round four in Dublin, we would be looking at, right, Galway, Kilkenny are in the Leinster final, who's playing for third?
Yeah.
And now it's totally underway. And you know what? It's great for that championship. It really, really is. These, you call them what they like. They were out of the blue results are after just totally shaking that thing up. And it's, you're talking about getting the game going in those, in that province as well, in the counties. Like, there's the best advertisement for it, you know what I mean? Next time the Carlow Hurlers are playing it's Netwatch, Dr. Culler Park, you know, I guarantee you, you won't get a ticket for it. And that's what these results does, Jackie. Like, you can be promoting it and you can try it all you want. It needs a big result. And that's what Carlow got. And that's what Antrim got the last day. And you know what? I'd say Corrigan Park will be packed to go and support now for what they did against Wexford, to try and give them something, give them a 2 or 3 point thing from the crowd and from the atmosphere. And that's what these results are doing for these counties. Yeah. We can talk about them and we can get development officers up there, but it's what these lads are doing now in the Leinster Championship is really pushing on the hurling in the Indian counties.
Yeah, it's been magic and we're looking forward to the last two rounds. We're going to have to leave it there. But Shane, thanks a million for being with us and best of luck to Tip at the weekend. May the best
Sunday,
team
Shane.
Win.
All right, lads. Yeah, I hope so.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
All right, Sean and Ryan are with us now to chat football. And lads, another one for the ages. 3 years in a row, we get extra time. Second year in a row, we get penalties. Sean, I don't know if Armagh know how to do anything other than penalties. There's been 6 penalty shootouts in the GAA and they've been involved in 4 of them. They've lost all 4. I don't know. Geezer must be thinking, how do I win one of these?
Yeah, you're welcome for Ulster, Jackie. But yeah, look, as a Tyrone man and someone from a mixed marriage with a Tyrone and Armagh background, the analogy between the English soccer team definitely was there at the weekend with Armagh losing again. Look, it's hard to watch them lose like that, and I know we make jokes and whatnot about it, but it's time and time again, and there is a trend that has been appearing, and for me, yeah, the penalties is one thing, and you start asking questions, just you know, are they not good at penalties, or can they deal with that sort of temperament you need to get through penalties? But for me anyway, it's more about how to stop playing with 20 minutes to go in normal time, and how to stop playing with 7 minutes to go in extra time, because that replicated what we saw against Monaghan for a good chunk of the sort of normal time and extra time last year. Similarly, there were 2 points up against Derry in extra time with a man up at that point. Derry had a black card and they pulled the handbrake again in that game. So we've seen this behaviour from them in the last sort of couple of years. And yeah, they can say they're unlucky, but at some point you have to look at yourselves and look at, why aren't we finishing these teams off? Because for me, Donegal were poor yesterday. Donegal were off it. We a lot of their most prominent players, Kieran Thompson, Ren McHugh, Paddy McGrady, these guys weren't in the game. I felt it was there for Armagh to go and kill them. And you don't win games by defending in the last 20 minutes. The best teams, if that had been a Dublin or Kerry yesterday, and there were 4 points up in that scenario, they would have drew Donegal onto them and they would have caught them in the break and they would have went forward themselves, because Donegal looked to be out on their feet. And if anything, Armagh bringing in the injection of guys from the bench, the Nugents and these guys come on and had a serious impact. I felt it was all there for Armagh to win, but they kept Donegal in the game the same way they kept those other teams in the game, and they're going to feel sore about that.
I think this one is going to hurt more than any of the others, Ryan, because it's not the first time they've been in this position, as Sean rightly says. And at some point, they're going to have to learn how to win these games, because how long more can they keep going with this team with the same way without something to show for it?
And we talked about this a couple of weekends ago, Jackie, as well, or a couple of weeks ago, sorry, in terms of how many times are they going to go to the well. There's a lot of miles, you know, on a lot of those players' clocks as well. And it is hard every year to kind of keep coming back to that reserve. And you know, yes, the desire is always there, but sometimes the body isn't there as well, you know, and you know that can be physically and mentally demanding as well. Sean's right, you know, fortune, you know, it usually comes with the brave as well. And we look at the weekend and we look at them, you know, I had it with about 15, 20 minutes left. Yeah, there were four up. And for me, they were completely dominant at that stage and rampant. For about the first 10 minutes, they sat back, gave Donegal the kickouts. And as much as, yeah, Donegal weren't playing well, they were obviously kind of tit for tat. It was score for score at that stage. When they'd went four ahead with about 15, 20 left, I think it was Campbell who put them four up. For me, that was the kind of juggernaut that should have pushed them on, and they should have been right. Let's put their foot down here. Let's stamp authority and really go after them. And they're just lacking, I don't know whether it's a confidence thing, they're just lacking that little bit of edge. And then you're Tiernan Kelly's chance, you know, for the mark at the end of the game. And you're just kind of saying, yeah, once they miss that. And I watched it down in my own club as well. We had talked about it all day. Draw, especially after the league final and how tight of a contest that was. But you're just looking at it and you're saying, you know, do they have that reserve to get over the line? You know, even when they were two up in extra time, I think it was O'Neill and Nugent, you're sitting going, you know, that this is bound to, you know, kick them on as well. But
Ran, you mentioned there, Nick, it's confidence. For me, I don't believe it is confidence. I believe I see individually some incredibly confident players in Armagh. I see young Connolly come on, like Turbot, Rain O'Neill, Campbell, these guys, Grugan, these guys are some of the best footballers in the game and some of the best like attackers, Gnat players in the game. But for me, it's fear. It's fear of, and I know, ironically, I listened to a podcast a couple of weeks ago where Paddy Burns was on talking about, you know, Kieran's telling us to go and attack and go and play really abandonment or without abandonment football. But with 20 minutes to go, they were winning marks, and you could see everyone pointing to kick the ball back. That sets the wrong tone. That sets a tone to everyone of, here, we're not attacking here anymore, lads. We're going to keep going backwards and keep going sideways. And that must frustrate the life out of the supporters, because you can see the joy that Connolly and Campbell were having at driving at them. And Donegal were gone. They're out in their feet. They couldn't stop them. But Armagh decided, no, you know what? We're gonna stop. 15 points is all we're gonna score here. And that's fear. That's fear of not
again, Sean. I thought from you know, we're talking about confidence as well. You know, I think maybe that was projected from the sideline as well. I don't know clearly. I didn't see that because it wasn't at the game. But for me, it seemed to kind of ebb and flow in terms of, yeah, that first 10, 15 minutes were. Yeah, and we know the weapon that Patton has as well. We know what his kickouts are like. We know that you know there's a certain way you kind of can't play in front of them in terms of even at his own kind of press, because you know he can pick out 60, 70 meters with two steps. He has a weapon that I don't think any other keeper has possibly in the country. But when they actually did press and they actually put a heavy squeeze on Donegal, I felt they got a lot of joy. And I thought just around that period that they seemed to drop back a bit, and you're right, they were happy to kind of keep the ball, to try and kind of force Donegal to come out and try and slip somebody, obviously, as well, you know, with Hughes kind of being the extra player as well, and then try and kind of get that, you know, extra opening and maybe get another score and then kind of chip away from there. But listen, you have to give credit to Donegal as well. They took their chances and they weren't bullied by Armagh, even though I did believe Armagh were the better team on the day, but they showed a bit of reserve and a bit of resilience as well, you know, and we knew they were going to come with that under McGuinness as well. They were going to have that bounce, but
There's something about McGuinness, isn't there? There's something about, yeah. Like, no matter what, like, this game was built of the McGuinness thing and like, Donegal played poorly, and yet you come out of it. And the first thing come to my mind was, oh, McGuinness's soccer background that he went and he cleared off and the penalty.
Learned a bit.
Donegal keepers, Paddy Bonner, Shea Given, now help Sean Patrick. Like, you know, no matter what happens, McGuinness seems to come out on the right side of it. Even when he does wrong, he seems to do right. So,
He was actually Finn Harps. I did get a bit of a background, and I think they snapped him up from Finn Harps at a younger age, I think, through, it would have been, yeah, I think it was Rory Gallagher, and I think I'd heard this story through a couple of people, yeah, that they'd snapped him up, they'd seen him playing when he was younger, and they were like, no, we need to get this guy, we need to get him in, you know, and he had a bit of a Gaelic background as well, so there it goes from the...
The penalties were outrageous, though, lads, on both sides, to be fair, weren't they? And Patton had gotten close to a load of them before he actually saved that final one, but I thought the penalties were of a top drawer, too.
Well, it's clearly, like, you know, we're talking about, well, it's something we might touch on in terms of the game as a spectacle and the lucrative side of the game. I'll let Sean elaborate on that, you know, later on as well. But, you know, we talk about it, you know, we talk about the condensed calendar, you know, why not give the players a game?
It was the only point I was going to make. Like, sorry to cut across you there, Ryan. As an outsider watching in, I thought it was an incredible game. I thought the quality was so high. Not too many goal chances, but some of the long-range shooting. And I'm glad you did a piece on it last night as well, Jackie, on the show. Extraordinary. I mean, like, there was some of the kick in. I presume there wasn't much of a breeze. You couldn't really tell, obviously, that from the TV, but it was just seemed a day for it. And my God, it was something to behold. Now, the sheer quality of score, because there wasn't that many frees. They were so disciplined in defence. You had to basically shoot from distance. And both teams, I mean, the one Oisín O'Neill got, O'Donnell out on the wing there at one stage.
What a
score.
Was goading them to shoot from
And they had a little bit of a set to afterwards. Yeah, it was fantastic. Now, it was extraordinary stuff. But Jackie, the only point I would make, I kind of sat
replay,
tight.
Replay.
I sat tight on penalties. I said, let's see how this thing manifests itself. And for me, right, it's only my own view. I don't know how lads feel. I think championship finals, even if you want to keep it going for the leagues, that's fine. But championship finals need to go to replays.
Yeah,
it's not a satisfactory way to finish a game. Cruel on Armagh.
I would totally agree with that, Rory. And I know, Ryan, you had a soccer background yourself. And the interesting thing for me was, I think most of those Armagh players who hit the penalties and most of the Donegal players who hit the penalties were all soccer players.
Soccer background.
All of a sudden, we turned the most important deciding factor in an Ulster soccer that was amazing into a soccer skill.
Like, Sean, could you imagine, right? And I know now they'll say, oh, we can't do this. No, you can do anything if you really put your mind to it. But could you imagine, let's say we go, okay, it's calendar's too tight. Okay, let's go Wednesday night. In Healy Park, right? Yeah. Wednesday night in Healy Park under lights, or Wednesday night or Thursday night. Let's take it to Kingspan and let's get the replay in and give the lads the day off work and compensate them for it, but give them another day out, fill the ground again. All the narratives around, oh my God, this is they're going to meet again. This is like Dublin Meade 91. Wheel, I mentioned it yesterday on the TV.
And make a fortune out of it.
The richest sporting organization in the world could become even richer than Sean, you know.
But Sean, amateur, that was the word.
Yeah. But Sean, you know, as well, Jackie and Rory, like, you know, we now have put, you know, together a committee that need to change the rules in the game. You know, you look at the weekend, you look at the high scoring affair that it was. Did anything need to change at the weekend? You know, as well. So for me, you're just kind of banging your head at times, thinking, going, you know, yeah. Where and what are we trying to do with our game? And we've had many conversations over the last number of weeks about this as well. The condensed season, you know, I just get frustrated with it, Sean, in terms of it. I think that we are trying to condense the season to allow more fixed, you could say lucrative, events to happen in Croke Park, e.g., even though I'll be heading up hopefully with my daughter Taylor Swift, and so be it, other events, you know, and I just think we're genuflecting for everybody else, and I think
it probably ties in even with the Cork Limerick thing and Saturday night, which I know we'll probably touch on. But for me, everything in terms of the sporting and the games, it's just rushed. We're rushing the big events. For me, growing up, I can still remember going to, I know it was knockout and stuff, but a day like yesterday, Tyrone playing Derry, Peter Canavan scoring 13 out of 14 Tyrone's points, 13 men. It was iconic. It got me into the game. Yeah. It made me, from someone who played basketball and played soccer and played rugby, it made me love Gaelic football because that event was so magnificent. We're still talking about Dublin and Meath 30 years on. Yeah. You know, these big events have to be cherished and have to be flaunted. Yeah. And with the rushed sort of element of our championship and everything else that's getting on that we'll talk about, it just feels wrong.
Like Armagh are being depicted as losers. They didn't lose.
No. Yeah.
Look at Clonus yesterday. Look at the colour. Look at the atmosphere. You know, that is Ulster football. You know, that is, you know, those big days. Sean, you've been fortunate to be in many of them. I was fortunate to play in a couple as well. But, you know, there's nothing absolutely beats that, you know, as well. And for some reason, we want to condense the calendar and take these days out, replays, etc. as well. And it's just crazy. It's banging your head off the wall stuff, you know.
Yeah, we have so many one-sided games at the beginning of the provincials, and even, may I say, we'll probably go into these group stages, and there'll probably be a lot of one-sided games as well. So those big games have to be a protected species. Like those big games have to be our showpiece of the game.
Hmm. To be fair, though, at least this weekend, I think you saw, like, let's say with Louth, Dublin as well, was much closer than people thought. I think Clare closed the gap on Kerry as well. And for all our moaning about the provincial structures, and trust me, we've done plenty of it on this podcast, I do think there actually has been, Ryan, I don't know, maybe just a more considered approach to it afterwards, that, yeah, there still is a place for them. It doesn't have to be necessarily in the point that we've just had it, but actually the provincial finals were all pretty competitive. I thought Louth yesterday were great too, and it did add to the spectacle around it. I'd still be in favour of moving the provincials to earlier in the season, but I thought it was a pretty good weekend.
Yeah, and they were well in the game. I think I tagged it. I think it was around the 54th minute. I think it was Dublin's goal. Actually, and it came from, unfortunately, a poor kick out from, I think it was McDonald and Nets, who was actually very good as well for Louth. But credit to Louth, you're talking about Clare as well. I think that's the overall kind of learning in the game as well. And sometimes we give off at social media, and maybe give off about maybe how the games are covered at times. But, you know, there's a lot of excellent punditry. I'd say Sean, I know he's here listening as well, but no. There's a lot of... What are you messing? No, there is a lot of learning from the game. You know, there's a lot of learning because, you know, we are blessed that the coverage is getting better in the game as well. So there's a lot of understanding in the game. And I think teams are starting to become more professional. Sorry, Sean, you can touch on that as well later. But it is, you know, it was credit to Louth. You know, they'd learned massively from last year. And I think as well, they expose, you know, some of maybe you could say Dublin's slight weaknesses, you know, as well. You know, they give up the kickouts. They knew that, you know, Cluxton was going to get the ball away, and they got everyone behind the ball. And then made Dublin work very, very hard for obviously the win as well. And, you know, it was up until really that goal where they gave as good as they got. You know, they counterattacked and they kept their wits and discipline. And, you know, I was very impressed with them a number of times, you know, a number of years ago when we played them with Fermanagh as well, when I was involved. And the likes of Mulroy and Downey and stuff as well, they were unbelievable. Grimes was brilliant yesterday as well.
Brilliant.
So for me, they have closed the gap. And there's a better just understanding out there of the modern game, which is very basketball-like, Sean, where it's just completely everybody getting back defending together, everyone attacking together as well. And that's the two transitions that, you know, there's very few sides now that are carrying players that can just defend. You have to bring everything to your game now. And that's how the game has evolved, and that's the way the game's going.
Yeah, and the thing with Louth yesterday is it's one thing putting everyone behind your 45 line and defend for your life, but you have to get the scores on the other end. And in fairness to them, when they got forward a real purpose, and they had Mulroy and Grimes in phenomenal form, and they were breaking lines. Young Keenan was very good as well. For me, it's a real testament to Gerard Brennan taking on a bit of a burning house there last October with the sort of anger of Mickey and Gavin Devlin leaving and the hurt that probably was carried with that. I think everyone expected, and we have seen now the little bit of sort of boom and bust over the years, we were almost expecting them to fall back a little bit. And if anything, they've taken a step forward and they've gone forward a real purpose. So I think they can now look into the group stage that they're going to be dropped into now with optimism. They could make it through the preliminary quarterfinal, and they're in the same group as Meath, aren't they? And I'd imagine on their day they would fancy your chances of taking down a Meath. For me, Dublin probably looked a little bit bored. It almost was, we've seen this before. It's a bit of a hot day. There's no atmosphere in Croke Park, which is disappointing. I know talk about where games should be played and all, but 20-odd thousand people in Croke Park's a bit of a lonely sort of place. It looked to me as if they just wanted to get out of there and get away. I wouldn't read too much into their form, but for now, yeah, definitely deserve the credit.
Yeah, I think Sean makes a good point there as well, Jackie, in relation to the round-robin stages in the groups. They took a pasting last year from Dublin in the Leinster final. They also took a ferocious hiding off Kerry in the round-robin. Now, they're going in to face Kerry again. But in that round-robin, they're in there on merit, number one. But number two, I don't know if Monaghan or Meath would scare the bejesus out of any of them. So no. I think they'll target getting out of that group. And I think a key aspect to making sure that their confidence wasn't damaged going into that was making sure they didn't get the mother and father of all beatings yesterday. So I don't think they need to apologise to anybody for setting up the way that they did, because I think it was about getting into this group stage now in the best shape that they could to have a real rattle off it and get some knockout football.
Yeah, totally agree. Just on to finish off on the Leinster final, though, as somebody said to me yesterday, in three of Dublin's games in Croke Park, they had less people than watched Leinster in Croke Park a couple of weeks ago in three matches. 20-odd thousand at each of them is madness.
That was the lowest record, was it, Jackie, as well? I'd read that somewhere.
Yeah.
In the Leinster final in maybe ever. I don't know. Was it?
Obviously the COVID ones and all that as well. But I think there was a Kildare one a couple of years ago that was quite low. But outside of that, Paul Flynn was saying to me yesterday, he was like, geez, I remember playing in front of 60, 70,000 people in these. Like, what has happened? So
ironically, from a Dublin perspective, it's doing them no good whatsoever.
No, totally.
As a player, and myself and Ryan have experienced 35,000 and all sellout and Clonus on Ulster final day. And some of those days are the greatest memories that I have playing football. For Dublin players there at the minute, going for their 14th in a row, playing in front of 20,000 people, that really feels like playing in a park, because there's no atmosphere in Croke Park with that. That's not what your career should be about. It's actually quite sad for them. And if anything, we all talked about trying to get them out of Croke Park to take that advantage away from them. I almost think it's almost disadvantaged at the minute. To me, yesterday, they just looked totally bored and disinterested.
Yeah, and listen, you ask any of them, they'd happily go anywhere else, trust me.
I think the fans as well, and we kind of forget them, Sean, as well. I think the fans actually enjoy, that journey. I think they're sick looking at Croke Park as well. It's something that maybe should be addressed. I think they've enjoyed the nights in Omagh, where the pitch was maybe a wee bit shorter than it should have been at times. You never know, but anyway.
The local economy made a fortune out of them, Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. speaking of economies then, let's get into the weekend, Sean, because you found yourself in, I would say, a spot of butter after Saturday night's show. Was the phone hopping after you called the GAA the richest organisation in the world, one of the richest organisations in the world? Gareth Burns this morning was not happy, felt it was a reckless comment. What do you have to say for yourself?
As I mentioned earlier, I think I maybe left out the word amateur. I'm not aware of any other amateur organisation.
No, you put the word amateur in, Sean, and it's very fair, correct comment.
I haven't pulled down the recent accounts, but I remember seeing it a couple of years ago and had, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 million euros of cash reserves in the bank, that a balance sheet of a couple of hundred million euro. I'm an accountant, I know this stuff. So I remember looking at it going, yeah, look, for an amateur organization owned by the members, owned by the people that are laying pitches, owned by the people that are in every club up and down the country. For me, that looks like a very healthy position. And I previously worked with a lot of soccer organizations in the Irish League and stuff, and Ran will probably know all about that. You know, a lot of them go bust all the time and haven't got two paid to rub together. So for me anyway, the GAA is in a very rude financial position, very healthy financial position. They're acquiring lots of very strategic assets all over the country. I think it was just the anger, particularly on Saturday night, obviously the fallout of the Cork Limerick thing, and ordinary GAA people, Jackie, losing out because, let's call it a spade, that game should have been on TV somewhere free to air. I think everyone recognised that. All the biggest games should be that. At GAA Go, I can remember GAA Go on our training tops with Irish International Rules back in, I think it's 2013. I was wearing it yesterday, believe it or not, coincidentally. But I remember it being sold to me as, yeah, this is going to provide games to the world outside of Ireland. But for me, Saturday night was us punishing people within Ireland, our own people that should be seeing that game. Because this organization, which is owned by RTE and GAA, there's definitely a strong suspicion that there's been tactical picking of the games to generate revenue and profit.
I think he more or less admitted that this morning on Clare Byrne. Didn't he, Jackie?
Yeah, he said that he wants it to be a major revenue generator for the association. Now, at the moment, I looked up the accounts. You're talking at the moment, Sean, it's bringing in over 2 million euro a year. It's not in a revenue stream of 112 million euro last year. GAA Go brought in 2.3 million. So it's a drop in the ocean of what the GAA are doing. It is certainly not a massive revenue generator yet. But I think that's what he's pushing for.
For me, Jackie, why would it be a profit-making organization? Why does the GAA Go have to? For me, I felt because, okay, RT, public organization, GAA, own best members, why does it have to turn a profit? Why can't those games be, whether it's subsidized or whatnot by the government, by that maybe you just take the hit on the bigger games and you show them free to air to the Irish public. But there's for me, there's a bigger picture here of trying to promote our game and trying to not punish the people that run our games. And I think that's where a lot of the anger lies, where it felt that it was a little bit sort of sneaky of the GAA on Saturday to put that game behind a paywall and punish the ordinary supporters who really needed to see that. And equally, that game should be flaunted wide, because that's the game that everyone's going to remember. That's the game that kids are going to get into hurling after seeing. You know, it just felt wrong for me.
I think this is the difficulty, Rory, that I have with it, where sometimes when, you know, people from the public are asking you about why can't you show that game or why can't you show that game? At the weekend, let's say the provincial finals are protected, you know, so they have to be shown on terrestrial TV. RTE don't have a choice in that. And I do think probably if they did have a choice, they would abandon the provincial structures and go for the picks of the weekend like the Limerick's Cork. But all of the games are never going to be shown anyway. So GAA Go, there isn't an essential need for it to be there. It's actually just the picks, as Sean said. That's the problem. It's when you pick one over the other, or you're forced into picking one over the other. This is where the difficulty comes. There are obviously connectivity issues as well. But I think there's going to have to be a world in which GAA Go exists, and everybody can feel that right now. It's just how this is managed into the future is what needs to be decided on over the next year or so.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the point. If you take it, there are kind of two key aspects for me in terms of what they put on, in terms of what they offer, number one, and the actual production itself. Very good. Gráinne McIlwain, top class. They had Bubbles and Owen Cadogan as pundits. Great crack. Mike Finnerty in the commentary box. Excellent. Seamus Hickey with him as a co-com. Top class as well. They had an interview with Sean Stack pre-match. I was trying for years as producer to Sunday Game Live, to try and get referees to come on. GAA would never allow it. That's maybe a knotted string to GAA Go's bow, that they can open doors that maybe we weren't able to. It was very good to get his thoughts in advance, because he was outstanding. By the way, he actually, if you could give man of the match, he was one of the contenders. That's how good Sean Stack was as a referee. So all of that, top class. I take out our subscription on Saturday night, 5 minutes to go. This thing pops up on the middle of the screen, big crowd watching, buffering. By the time that's resolved itself, someone had tapped me on the shoulder. Rory Cockcroft to win in the match. So the point here, the first aspect, what they offer, top class, right? Very good. Second aspect, do we have the infrastructural broadband connectivity and bandwidth across this country to deliver a service that's fit for purpose? I'm not sure we do. Mm-hmm. And what are your potential solutions? Could you put GAA Go on Serviu, for instance, to try and make it slightly easier for people to get access to? Would that offset some of the criticisms? Because Serviu is
there. I know you're talking about the connectivity, but if that game was free to air to Irish people on Saturday night, and even if there was buffering issues here and there, I don't think anyone would be too annoyed, because you know that's you're talking about something different the government has to deal with, you know. But I think the fact that people had to pay for it is probably the anger. But it's free and there was some connectivity.
And it's a promotional. I mean, Mick Foley made mention of it in the Sunday Times yesterday that it's a dereliction of duty on the GAA's part because it's a promotional opportunity missed out. I mean, the reality is that Cork Limerick game probably hit somewhere around 600,000 people watching. Certainly by the end of the game, because you normally have a pile on when the game goes into the melting pot. Now, GAA can talk all they want.
Now, it would have on RTE, but there's no way it would have hit that on a streaming platform.
Oh, of course. That's what I'm saying. On RTE, that's the kind of audience that you would have ended up with, right? And that is a massive OG by the governing body.
Hmm. Now, the only thing is, I heard Gearlaith Burns this morning, Sean, saying that they met Sports Minister Thomas Byrne last week. They've had lots of conversations with the government and none of them ever raised any issues about GAA Go. But yet Simon Harris came out last week, Micheál Martin came out last week, all talking about it. But Gearlaith Burns is making a strong suggestion this morning that, you know, laughing, saying you'd swear there's an election coming up, that it's very populist, that they're all jumping on it now. But I'm not sure, because it seems to me that there's a groundswell that the politicians, yes, they are jumping on because there is an election coming up, but it's because they are being told by their constituents consistently that this is a problem for them.
Well, I'm not sure what discussions obviously had, but for me anyway, I don't look too far forward in my life. I'm not sure whether those discussions were about whether Cork and Limerick was on the following Saturday behind GAA Go or on RTE, but like GAA Go for me, it should do two things. It should bring the games that ordinarily you don't get to see anyway. So whether it's Antrim Tipperary yesterday and Tailteann Cup, something like that, yeah, perfect. You know, people are going to see that, and ordinarily you're not going to see it in RTE. And then it's bringing the games to the world. And you know, I was in Chicago last weekend, and you're trying to explain hurling to people, and you're trying to explain Gaelic football to people, and they're sort of looking at you going, yeah, I think I saw that in Sky one time. It was amazing and all, but a game like Saturday night broadcast to the world will do wonders to promoting Gaelic games all over the world. And that's ultimately what, like, I think that's what the GAA should be trying to do here. We should be trying to grow our games, grow, because there is Irish everywhere. They're doing that anyway, but bring the games to the world. Don't punish Irish people, but yeah, use it to bring the games elsewhere and bring the games that aren't going to be shown anyway. So yeah.
Yeah. Well said, Sean. I'm sure this is not going to be the last of it, but
it'll come around again next year and the year after. It'll be an annual occurrence now.
Yeah. Until they get a handle on it, because I think, you know, there's just so much emotion around this subject that there's no doubt about it. Everybody just wants to see more games. And thankfully, it's because the football and the hurling has been great this year, you know, and I think maybe that's probably the point that we'll get to. Yeah, exactly. Listen, trust me, I sit in that hot seat enough. I know exactly what the heat feels like. So look, lads, we'll leave it there. But thoroughly enjoyed another brilliant weekend of football, and hopefully more of it to come. Sean, thanks a million for being with us.
No worries, good.
There's the whistle, it's over! It's over!